I was here before, as you well know, some of you who might have been here, and so I'm going to sort of cut my resume, if you will, down a bit so I don't bore you. But I guess it's coming up to my 30th wedding anniversary, October 30th. As I say, I've been blessed for 30 years. Laurel's number's around 12 to 15 somewhere in terms of celebrating. No, all kidding aside, marriage is a challenge, as we all know, and I always like the story that Ruth Graham, Billy Graham's wife, tells when she was being interviewed by Larry King, for those that haven't heard it. It's a great story. You know, Larry's on his show one night, and of course he's leaning across the table. He's got the suspenders just flapping, and he says, "Now, Ruth, let me ask you. You're married to one of the world's great evangelists. But in those 32 years of marriage, have you ever considered divorce?" And she said without a second's hesitation, "Divorce, no. Murder, yes." We have been blessed with four children, Michael, Teddy, Blair, and Jack. We're going to talk a little bit about Ted as we do this presentation. But Michael, I heard the story about the testimony about the surgery. Michael is in the rip and grip department in London, Ontario. He graduated from medical school, and he's doing 5 years general surgery. And the common theme for all our boys is they've discovered their passion, they're committing the resources needed to become successful at it, and they're sharing it with others, and that's how I define success. Ted, I guess, is in Waterloo. He was in the co-op engineering program at Waterloo, but dropped out to start his own business. For your young people in the crowd who do text messaging, you might recognize the name Kik, and that's his company. It's a cross-plat. We're all a little too old at my end to understand it, although I do have it on my BlackBerry now. Blair is in New York. Blair went to Waterloo. But he was at Wilfrid Laurier when he was in the city of Waterloo and did his co-op business program, and now he's found his passion sitting on a trading desk in New York learning the investment business. And then our young son, Jack, and tragically had a stroke in the pregnancy, and Jack is now 18, but he's discovered his passion. Unfortunately, he can't communicate it with us, but I can tell you having a Jack in your life opens areas of your heart that you would never get opened otherwise. And you know, when I do these talks, there's sort of three central themes that I talk about. The first theme is that we all have choices. When we left the Garden of Eden, as we all know, God left us the freedom of choice. And when we make a choice, it requires a decision. It requires, hopefully, the right decision, but in many cases, making the wrong decision is better than no decision. Because if you have the attitude that you can learn from your wrong decisions, your wrong choices, you know, work your way through it and make that part of your life going forward, you're on the way to success, however you define it. So it's very important that when you make a choice, it requires a decision, and that decision requires a commitment. And the commitment requires planning, hard work, discipline, passion, patience, but must never forget love. And, you know, there's a great Japanese proverb that says, you know, knowledge without wisdom is a load of books on the back of an ass. And we are very, very fortunate to have a book of wisdom. Unfortunately, it will never happen, but the book of Proverbs should be mandatory studying in all our schools. There are 31 chapters, and it's the best, in my opinion, one of the best sources of wisdom you can get. When it comes to commitment, we must never forget love. Once again, this book is covered in love. It was written in love. Don't get all worked up about, you know, the passion, the patience, the discipline, the hard work. Never forget love. My talk today is leaving a legacy. And I took a philosophy course in university. I did do, you know, sort of try to expand my horizons. It was rather a dangerous experience taking philosophy. But there was one particular teaching that I did understand, and that is A is to B is B is to C, therefore A is to C. In other words, if freezing rain causes the roads to be icy, and when the roads are icy, it's dangerous to drive, I don't need to walk out and see if the roads are icy when I see freezing rain to know that it's dangerous to drive. Now, when we think about leaving a legacy, there are many people that have left legacies in our world. Adolf Hitler left a legacy. Not the legacy that we want to have. My grandmother left a legacy. Best chocolate sauce recipe on the planet. But kidding aside, the person who left the greatest legacy was Jesus. He left us a legacy. Now, here's where my philosophy, of course, kicks in. If we are required to die to self and become more like Jesus, ergo, we are required to leave a legacy. And not only leave a legacy, we are required to leave the best legacy that we have been given. And we're all given different roadmaps. We're all given different opportunities. We're all given different settings to leave our legacy. But that's the key thing. It's not whether you're going to leave a legacy. We're all going to leave a legacy. The requirement is to leave the best legacy you can. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. A good man leaves an inheritance, and we're going to just use Proverbs. It's wonderful that I can actually speak in front of an audience. I don't have to hide my Christian values. I can actually share with you the book of Proverbs. I'm not saying, I mean, I have to use wisdom when I speak in the secular world, of course. It would be, you know, here it's something like a Winston Churchill quote, right? I mean, that's the tragedy. You know, you go back a whole generation. I mean, go back to Abraham Lincoln. Go back, I haven't got any quotes, but, you know, Pearson. You know, we have an airport named after him. These were good Christian men, I believe, that when you look at, you know, you look at Abraham Lincoln, a house divided will not stand. Well, my gosh, he just slipped that out of Proverbs, reworded it, and put a quote on it. You know, you go to Benjamin Franklin, the same thing. So this is so important, and the word inheritance all of a sudden cogitates the term money. And so 80% of us who maybe are not blessed with money say, oh, well, this is not for me. I can turn it off right now. No. No, no, no. It takes little time and effort to leave your money. It takes little money, but a lot of time and effort to leave your values. Let me say that again. It takes little time and effort to leave your money. Writing a check is very simple. It takes a lot of time and effort and little money to leave your values. When we leave just money for the next generation, we help them meet a need. That's it. Usually, that's all it is. You know, and the thing's gone. I can tell you, I'm in the wealth management business. It's one of the greatest challenges for families with money to move it to the next generation. However, when we leave our values, we help the next generation accomplish their goals. And lastly, when we leave some money and our values, we help the next generation achieve their dreams. And this is the second common theme in all my essays, and that is establish your vision. If you're a parent, what is your vision as a parent? If you're a grandparent, what is your vision as a grandparent? Whatever task you're doing, what is your vision? Now, establishing your vision is sort of one step away from trying to figure out infinity. It's a very difficult concept. So I break it down a little differently to give you steps. I'm not saying it's paint by numbers, but it at least will help you think about it. And that is, first of all, establish your dreams. My name on my website is dreamscostnothing.com. And I encourage you to go to it. There's a whole bunch of different papers, essays I've written, rather. They're all free. They're all PDFs. There's no sort of hidden agenda to try to get your Visa card out. They're divided into family, philanthropy, personal development, and wealth management. And they're all there. And you can sort of poke around and see. Anybody has a grade 12 grandson, granddaughter, son, or daughter, go there. I just wrote an essay called In Search of Your New World. It's well worth reading. By the way, for the parents, I'm just finishing one for you, and it's titled, It's Time to Let Go. It is time to let go. When they're at grade 12 and going off to whatever they are doing, high school, university, taking a gap year, start putting in the process to let go. So the first thing is to establish your dreams. Well, dreams cost nothing. Implementation gets expensive. And implementation refers to defining your goals and creating the plans. When you establish a dream, it's a what-if wish. Very big out there, not a whole bunch of commitment. When you start moving it into goals, it becomes a what-can-be statement. And then, yes, plans. Plans are what-must-be-done commitment. And it's the greatest challenge of our time. I couldn't help but think, I hope I'm not raining on the parade, but with all those options, if I was sitting in the audience, I would just list them 1 through 5. What you think touches your heart the most of all those different things that are available, and at least do number one. Don't let all 5 of them bury you to do nothing. Pick what you think is the most appropriate, and then if you have time, God bless you, do number 2. But don't sit there and say, oh, I can't possibly do any of all of them, so I'm not going to do any of them. Well, that's not the right way to take it. So when it comes to plans, and we're going to talk about that, and I'm going to share you some of the plans I've used with our family. But I want to start off with a video clip. There's actually two of them. For those that were here, I guess it was in July, you're going to recognize the first part, but the second part is new. Yes, that's my grandson. That's my father behind, and that's young Ted, age 3, climbing up the treehouse ladder.
Are you going to sleep out here, Teddy?
Not for now.
Not for now.
What are you doing?
Oh, you can do it yourself. Can you?
We got Ted Livingston with On Stage with the On Stage Media Players.
19 years later, he's growing up. The whole thing about leaving a legacy starts in a city called success. I've written an essay called A Tale of Two Cities. Of course, Charles Dickens made it far more famous than I will ever make it as a book. But it's 100 years and all the infringements, etc. I don't think Charles would have a problem with it at all. And in that essay, A Tale of Two Cities, I asked parents a simple question: where do you want your children to end up? A city called success, a city called responsibility, or a city called entitlement? And I don't think any parent wants their kids to end up in a city called entitlement. I've taken the liberty of introducing two new cities in this talk, a city called success and a city called significance. And I believe the journey to leave a legacy must start in a city called success. In other words, you have to be comfortable who you've become, however you define success. I define it, as I said earlier, discover your passion, commit the resources needed to make it a success, and share your passion and success with others. When you do those three things, that's why I'm doing it today. This is my passion. I'm successful at what I've done at it. But the real fun and where you get better is when you share it with others. I saw one of the best in the business, John Maxwell, at a conference. He shared, you know, that he was speaking, he had a half-hour slot, and he spoke. But he said, I was so fortunate that I had dinner with all the speakers the night before, and I showed up and I took notes on all of them. And this guy's one of the best in the business, there's not the best, but he's definitely one of the best in the business. Matter of fact, someone came up to him and said, John, I was at a conference 20 years ago and I heard you speak and I'm just so fortunate. And he said, well, I'm so sorry. And he said, no, I wish I had heard you 20 years ago. I heard you tonight, I've got the story wrong. I wish I'd heard you 20 years ago. And John said, oh, no, you don't. You're fortunate that you didn't hear me 20 years ago. And he said, no, I wish I had. He said, I heard myself 20 years ago. He's moved ahead a lot. And that's the whole idea. The whole idea is to continually refine your passion, make yourself better at it. Don't say, well, I've arrived and now I can stop. Whatever it may be, you've not arrived. You always have more opportunities. Well, those two video clips, there was a lot in between Ted being 3 years old and around 1990. And that video clip you saw very briefly of Ted walking across the stage at the 2009 DevCon Awards put on by Research in Motion. At that time, he would have been 22 years old. So there were 19 years between the two stories. And I'm going to fill a story into the middle, a little bit more towards the DevCon Awards in 2009. In 2006, young Ted, well, at that time, he was in second year, still in university. He came home, and he was light years ahead, really, of a lot of kids that age. And he said, Dad, I want to talk to some people who are successful in their careers. Can you put me in touch with some various people? And I do believe for this generation, networking has become a very critical skill. The low-hanging fruit is gone, ladies and gentlemen. This generation is going to have battles that we just didn't have. And so we have a responsibility to help them. But I don't want to go off on that tangent, or as Mary Audrey would say, those rabbit tracks, or we'll get hopelessly lost. But read some of this stuff. Understand what this generation is going through. The low-hanging fruit is gone. Well, anyways, Ted came home, and I put him in touch with an investment banker that I knew, went over and saw him, dressed appropriately, came back and said, no, Dad, that career is not for me. The hours are too long. I said, be careful what you judge, as I saw later, because sometimes it comes home to roost. I think his hours right now are longer than he ever would have had as an investment banker. Anyways, that was okay. He's finding out what he didn't like. And for a variety of reasons, he didn't want to go into investment banking. I then put him in touch with a venture capitalist, or as we refer to in the business, a VC. And he came back, he said, well, that was interesting, Dad, but give me another name. I want to talk to somebody else. And I said, Ted, what about Granddad? Granddad, he said? You mean my grandfather? Why would I want to talk with him? And I said, well, hold on, Ted. I mean, to be fair to, you know, yes, you know him as your grandfather, but, you know, he actually did something for the previous 60 years before he became your grandfather. He actually was president of Eaton Bay Financial. He was very successful in the whole insurance industry. There's some famous stories of what he did. He was actually offered the presidency of New York Life Worldwide, and he said, no, I'm turning it down. I'm a Canadian, and I want to stay in Canada for my family. And that was, those in the industry, it's a very powerful story. New York Life is the second or third largest life insurance company in the world. Anyways, let me give you a little secret. When your Visa card and the invite to the keg arrives, grandchildren and children are quite open to discussing life. So off Dad went with Ted to the keg one night. Now this was December 2006, and Dad in November of that year had been diagnosed with esophagus cancer. Dad probably had around another 8 months to live. But they went out to that dinner, and in that dinner, Dad sewed his DNA into Ted. I do believe they discussed the values. I believe they discussed Dad's failures. Because you know what, ladies and gentlemen, when you're discussing with the younger generation, keep the successes short, talk about your failures. Anybody who gets up here and says, I've never failed, is a liar. That's a harsh statement to say, but it's true. Or just naive. Live in the largest river in the world called denial. So they went out, and actually there was some humor to it, and what Dad had done when he got a scholarship, he bought a golf membership, and Ted was just blown away. He saw a whole different side of Dad that he had never seen before. And they discussed the lessons of the world, the lessons of life, etc. And they came back, and at the end of that hour and a half, and that's all it was, at that hour and a half, they came back, and they agreed to meet together again. And unfortunately, that never occurred. But I tell this story because I think it's important. You know, we saw Dad, at young Ted, at age 3, 2009, Dad no longer here. Because something happened that night. I believe the Holy Spirit imparted into Ted through Dad. Because that's how it works, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't always come directly from here. It can come sideways, too. And matter of fact, the sideways ones are the hard ones to recognize sometimes. So that night, Ted saw a whole different side of Dad. And I share this story because Ted, you know, Dad was in the process of leaving a legacy, his legacy, to his grandchildren. And the tragedy was a lot of the other grandchildren never got the same opportunity that Ted did. But I can share the story with you today and maybe instill an inspiration for grandparents out there to re-examine how they're doing their role. So as I said earlier, the whole principle of leaving a legacy starts in a city called Success. So before you start becoming significant, make sure you've established your success. And so I think a great quote from Proverbs, finish your outdoor work and get your field in order. After that, build your house. In other words, get your success organized before you start the journey to significance. So what does it mean to live in a city called Success? Well, first of all, of course it means you have to achieve success, however you define it. Now, I define success, as I said earlier, discover your passion, commit the resources needed to become successful at it, and share your passion and success with others. But however you define it, establish that you've arrived in a city called Success. It could be a good marriage, it could be a functional family, it could be giving back to the community, it could be financial independence. Whatever you want to decide of success, have a definition that you can work with. But at some point, we arrive in that city called Success, and we ask, surely to God, there's more than just this. I mean, do I really need a car, a new car, every, in my case, 8 years? The answer is probably yes, but I try to drive my car as long as I can. But all kidding aside, I think we actually start to reach inside ourselves and say, surely there's more to life than just being successful. What is my significance? Is there something I can do that 25 years from now, I'll be more than just a little plot, perhaps, on a piece of ground. Will I, you know, and so the question is, what is my legacy? This is, I think, where the search for significance, actually, the search for significance starts in that third part of defining of success, sharing it with others. When you begin to share it with others, you say, ooh, I don't know if this sounds like, you know, this is saleable. So you begin to ask the question, what is my legacy? Am I leaving a legacy that I'm happy with? And if I'm not happy with, what can I do to make my leave a better legacy? Okay? So I think this is where the search for significance starts. Now, what can easily happen, though, before you sort of move out the door to the road to significance is you can just get stuck in success. You never leave. And what happens is you achieve success as you defined it at the very beginning with one problem. You forget love. You can have all the plans in the world. You can be disciplined, passion, hard work, patience. You can decide, I wanted a house in this particular area of town, and I've got it. But the price you paid that you never, well, and I see it in my business. You work hard all your life. You hit age 60, 65, whatever, the tap on the shoulder comes and you leave the business. And you arrive home and your wife has become a roommate and your children have become acquaintances. And so you get stuck in a city called success. So I think that's why God gave us all the other things through the Bible. But in Corinthians it says, love must cover all. So if you've lost the love, there's a great risk that you'll never even leave your city called success. And it won't be the city you thought you were going to when you first started your journey to success. So we're going to talk about the journey to significance, and then we're going to talk about a city called significance, just so you know where I'm going with this. The journey to significance. The corrections of discipline are the ways to life, Proverbs 6, verse 23. I think, you know, I will divert for 2 seconds. I'm going to be speaking to a number of grade 12 classes at various schools. And I think one of the things we have to encourage this younger generation, do not be afraid of disappointment. Do not be afraid of failure. Do not be afraid of adversity. I will tell you, you will learn more with the right attitude from your mistakes and adversity than you will ever learn from your successes. And if you can overcome the adversity and the mistakes, it's open field time. You can go miles. I've been fired twice in my career. Midlife crisis for around 8 weeks. No, 8 weeks, 8 days. No, maybe not even that long. Anyways, well, everybody should have one midlife crisis. As John Maxwell says, better to have it early in life so there's not many boxcars behind you as opposed to late in life. But everybody will have crisis. Of course you will. Come on. But both times, having been fired, I found new careers and took it to new levels of excitement. And I think, you know, we have to teach our children that you are going to run into adversity. But the only way you can discover your passion is by taking risk, expanding your comfort zone, stretching your skill set. These are all very, very important messages. That, and so what I actually say, and you know, I'm just writing out this thing, it's time to let go. I say to the parents, before your children go off to university, or college, or a gap year, whatever they're doing, sit down with them and discuss some of the failures you did. For heaven's sakes, we all made mistakes. Don't be embarrassed. Show them how you worked your way through it. So, so important. So, preparing for the journey. I think there's 3 ingredients that are needed for the journey to a city called significance. Passion, knowledge and wisdom, and time. Notice the absent. Money. Money's not needed for a journey to significance. It's nice to have. It helps the other parts at times, but it's not one of the 3 necessary ingredients. Now, why is passion so important? Well, passion provides the spark and the energy and the fuel to keep you going. Look, we all know if we had to, every woke up in the morning and said, what one thing do I want to do today? That's sort of where our passion is. What is our passion? Because when you've discovered your passion, and commit to be the best you can be at it. You look at John Maxwell's walk. That's what he did. That's what he's done. And his billing rate at times can be $10,000 an hour. It is irrelevant, the money. The money is, he says, I mean, I listened to one little thing he did, and he said, money gives you options, but more importantly, money gives you the opportunity to help others. He said, I'm sure he would say, you know, I fly to Africa. I'm not going to con you. I probably fly business class, right? The family flies business class. I don't think John sort of, you know, sitting at the back in the economy necessarily, but I'm not judging him for that. I'm just saying he's entitled to that. But he also, believe me, or tell me if I'm wrong, he came to Mission Fest, and when they asked for the bill, he said, this one's on me. Exactly. This one's on me.
And he had a friend climb up in a private plane.
Yeah. I mean, which is great. Yeah. I haven't got to that page yet. I'll have to keep working on it. I've got some friends with private planes, but not yet. No. So passion is right at the top of the list. But secondly, knowledge and wisdom are important. I said earlier, knowledge without wisdom is like a load of books in the back of an ass. You know, knowledge is available to all of us now. It's called Google, and it's all available in less than half a second. You can put in, I am blown away when I'm looking for some research on topics, how quickly. I mean, I was just for fun of it. I don't know if anybody's a baseball fan, but I was thinking, you know, the Yankees are out, Boston's out, Philadelphia's out. These are the three highest payrolls in baseball. So I thought, well, I wonder who else spent a lot of money. And so I just Googled, you know, not thinking that I would get close to it first cut. You know, Major League Baseball, payroll salaries, 2011. Bingo. 0.32 seconds. All 30 of them lined up, 1 through 30. And just for your knowledge, the Jays were $64 million and the Yankees were 200 and change. Yeah, matter of fact, Tampa Bay was next. They ran out of room at the bottom for Houston, but Tampa Bay was $47 million, and they almost got into the playoffs. Well, I guess they did get into the playoffs. Sorry, I take that back. They did get into the playoffs. So it's not all about money in baseball either. Well, anyways, knowledge and wisdom are extremely important, and you have to have both. And there's no point in sort of marching out the door saying, well, I'm going to make choices and decisions, and knowledge without wisdom, as I said, can cause a lot of problems. And then the third part is time. Time is extraordinarily important. You know, for a grandfather, like my father, you know, those Saturday morning hockey games, sitting there with the Tim Hortons coffee, I'm not sure it was on top of dad's list to get up at 7 in the morning on a Saturday, but he knew he wanted to sow into his grandchildren. Matter of fact, he had 9 boys, interesting enough. And so at my suggestion, it must have been a Holy Spirit moment, at my suggestion, I said to my mother, why not for dad's birthday, go out and get him customized license plates called BB Team. Baseball team. And so that's what, so dad drove that car with pride. And the great thing is when dad passed away in 2007, Michael, our eldest, and Michael was the eldest grandson also, was going to his first year of medical school at Western. And dad always had a passion for medicine. And when he retired, one of his things he did is he became very involved in the medical community as a, not as a fundraiser, but as a businessman bringing process to it. So he would sit as chairman on a number of different activities, et cetera. And so I thought it was so neat to see Michael take dad's car with the license plates and by the way, it was a 2000 Buick Century, so it wasn't exactly, it didn't exactly, it drove fine, but it didn't last the full 4 years, let's put it that way. But, you know, I have a picture of my mother on one side of the car and my son on the other side of the car, and there is BB Team in the middle. And so dad's legacy continued on with Michael at university. So I think it's extremely important. Passion, knowledge and wisdom, and time. Passion provides the spark. Knowledge and wisdom provide the roadmap to a city called significance. And lastly, time is needed for the journey. Matter of fact, I call time as the fuel. Time is the fuel. It's the gas in the tank. So one of the great challenges, in terms of the investment side at least, is the generational transfer of wealth. And in the essay, I talk a lot more about it than I'll talk about it here. But just let me say, this whole journey to significance is open to everybody. This is not just rich families and the rest sort of sign off. No. Everybody can establish their values. But when it comes to money, it becomes very, very challenging for families to do a transition from one generation to the other. And the reason being, for the most part, is the wall of secrecy that's built around the money. And it's very difficult to be transparent without leading to entitlement. But there are different ways that you can do it, and I'll try to share with some of those with you. And whether it be that you have $5, $500,000, or $5 million, the principles are the same. The third part I want to talk about in this journey of significance, I want to share with you some stories, and I recognize some of these stories I used last time I was here, so I'm going to cut through very quickly I'm going to cut through the first two pretty quickly, and then I've got a third one that was not here, I don't believe, when I talked. So the first one is, you know, the whole overriding principle of my journey when it comes to trying to teach some of these concepts is it is our wealth to teach our children our values. And you can take it a little bit, you know, we don't have to necessarily word teach, but at least share and entice to teach them. Like, you know, it's not a big hammer time, but You wanted to say, look, these are our values. These are what we value in terms of our daily walk. And the only way you can do that is to try to share with them and put something in place that teaches them. So the first one is, as I mentioned earlier, take your kids when they're 5 or 6 years old, or your grandchildren when they're 5 or 6 years old, down to the bank, open a bank account in their name, establish a principal that will come back every year for the next 10 years till you turn 16, and we will give you a bonus in what you've saved. Now, in our case, we gave a 25% bonus. We did that for 10 straight years. Got a little problematic when ATM cards came in, or ATM machines. But we got through all that, and by the time they turned 16, they each saved close to $2,000. The $2,000 was really a rounding, not error, but it wasn't the reason we did it. The reason I did it, was to teach the values that go with that. So they learned the basics of wealth management. They learned how to save. They learned the difference between immediate and delayed gratification. And so these are all very, very important lessons that I think you want to teach your children. The second one is, and we only did this once, and that was, I think, a tragedy, we sponsored a family at Christmas. You know, when you look in the spectrum of things of your Christmas budget, to spend $150 on a family, it really, you know, I appreciate some families don't have money, and I don't mean just to throw away $150, but prioritize. Remember what I said earlier with the five choices? Well, you know, put a budget for Christmas and take 15% of that budget and sponsor another family. You know, go out, probably this church could help you with names, a family that's not quite as fortunate as you are. And I think it'd be a great present, and I speak from no personal experience because I'm not a grandparent yet, right? I think it'd be a great gift as grandparents to their grandchildren to help them sponsor a family. Whether you sponsor a family or sponsor philanthropy, you know, giving money, you know, go to the grandchildren and say, you know, we'll underwrite a $100 donation to the charity of your choice, but we ask you to come to us and explain why you've chosen this charity. In other words, come and sell us. And if we both agree, we will then give a donation. Grandparents get a receipt, of course. The grandchildren will be blessed that they've done something to make the world a little better place. And commit to that every 10, you know, for the next 10 years. I mean, really, in the spectrum of things, you know, maybe it's $50, maybe it's $25. It's the time you're taking that's so much more important. And then the third story I want to share is, anybody who has children with cell phones knows this. This is a beast that can easily get out of control. You know, the idea of a 10-year-old having a full BlackBerry, and I hear it, is just ridiculous. God bless our nanny. I talked to her, and her daughter, Crystal, is, I think, 12 years old now, maybe 10, and she's got a BlackBerry. And I said, you know, it's a $25. She doesn't have all the bells and whistles that go with it. But I said to her, you know, it's so important that Crystal pays for part of that BlackBerry, whether it be a dollar a month, whether it be $2 a month. It's easy for parents just to underwrite it because it's less work. Remember what I said? It takes little time and effort to leave your money, give away your money. It takes a lot of time and effort and little money to teach values. And so if you don't do this, what happens is you're sowing into this small sense of entitlement that over the years will grow to a big sense of entitlement. And matter of fact, there's a men's group at the main campus, and one of the guys came in, and I don't think I'm breaking any confidence because I won't mention the name, but he said, you know, I've got 4 kids now, and my cell phone bills are like $500-$600 a month. I mean, this is a beast. And these kids weren't like, you know, 10, 11. They were into their 20s, some of them. And what I said, he asked, like, what do I do? I said, well, if it was me, I'd do the following. I'd go home to my wife, I'd sit down with her and say, I messed up. See, once you say, I messed up, there's not a lot they can then say. Well, you're darn right. Yeah, I did. I messed up. You know? But I got the second piece of news. There's a new sheriff in town. So what you have to do when you get into this, and I see people in our family with this problem, you can't just cold turkey the whole situation. You have to say to the children over the next 3 months, 6 months, there is a new sheriff in town. I'm going to tell you where it's going to end up 3 months from now. I'm going to tell you how we're going to get there, and it's non-negotiable. And so whatever the number is, if they're 24, you're paying for your own cell phone. If you're 16, you're paying for 25% of it. Whatever, you know, you have to work it out. Each situation's different. But if you don't do that, if you just wake up one day and say, forget it, cancel all the plans, it's like a heroin addict pulling the thing out without any withdrawal. That's unfair. So the common theme or the common approach in all these stories that I've shared with you is I come back to what I said earlier. Establish your dreams, define your goals, create your plans. Too often in life, we just jump into a plan that we really haven't thought about, and we get hooked into a situation that we said, how did I get here, and how do I get out of here? Wouldn't it be better? I'll give you an example. I think I talked about it last time. Michael, our eldest, got married in 2007, and 2009, I'm sorry, 2009. And so he's graduated from medical school, and he's going to be in London for the next 5 years. And they decided as a couple, his wife is a doctor-to-be. She graduates next year, not this year. And, talk about a low-beta family. Two doctors? Ooh. Like, it doesn't get much better, right? I mean, even a school teacher would have more risk in terms of the economy. Doctors, we know we're always going to need. But you could see clearly that they wanted to start buying a house, and I think it's great, young couple. And I said to Laurel before we went, my wife, before this thing got anywhere out the door, I said, you and I have to sit down and talk about what we want to do for them, recognizing whatever we do for them, we have to multiply by 3 in our minds, or at least in our balance sheet, because it would be unfair to Ted and Blair to not do the same. Now, neither one are married, so it's not an issue right now. But again, you've got to think out there. What are we trying to do here? We're trying to help our children get started because we all know a house can be an integral part of bringing a couple together, etc. But if all you do is plop a certain amount of money without any discussion at the operating level, i.e. the husband and wife, you run the risk of big problems down the road. You know, is it a gift? Is it a loan? If it was a gift, why can't we ask them, you know, we're not comfortable what you're doing these days. Well, a gift should be a gift without strings and all these other things. And the reality is when it comes to money in these type of situations, as a matter of fact, at any age, whether they're 2 years old and going to the candy store or they're 25 years old and buying a house, most often, 98% of the time, parents can afford to give their kids more money than their kids can be afford to be given. In other words, don't put them into a lifestyle just because you give them a big chunk of money and then all the things that go with that chunk they can't afford. Right? So, and you know what? It's better to give a little less than they can afford to be given to keep them hungry rather than to give them too much and make them, wouldn't it be so easy just to go to the candy store? Oh, take whatever you want, kids. You're 3 years old. You should know by this age what you can eat. And it's an open end. Here's my Visa card. I'm going to go play golf. And when you're finished, just go home. And no, I mean, obviously, that would be a disaster. You all know that. It's the same thing when you give them money for this. So anyways, Laurel and I sat down. We went through it and came up with a proposal. It's in the essay. I encourage you to read it. But the key point is we established our dream. We defined our goal. And we created the plans that were consistent with the first two. Good communication is so, so essential. It is extremely important in the generational transfer of wealth. It is extremely important in the legacy you're leaving. This is something I've had to work on, and I'm still a work in progress. Communication, especially for the next generation with all their texting, and it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a big-time challenge. I think it's important. My dream was that they achieve a fulfilling life and achieve financial independence. In terms of the goal or the plans, to give them real lessons in life. That's what I was doing, whether it be the bank account, whether it be the philanthropy sponsored a family at Christmas, even when they get older. One of the guys at work, he's got a 22-year-old daughter, and I was talking to him about this and said, well, does she have a tax-free savings account? He said, oh, yeah, I put the money in there every year for her. And I said, no, you've got it wrong. I mean, my opinion, and I don't have all the right answers, of course. I don't think I was that strong. But I said, why wouldn't you try this? Go to her and say, we think you should have a tax-free savings account. We'll put the first $250 in it, and then we will give you a 25% bonus, or we will match, or whatever you want to do, into that tax-free savings account. Now, I don't do this because it'll then cost the parents less money. They can put the money elsewhere in other things. But you want them to have a sense of participation. Communication is important. You want to have them a sense of accomplishment. It's their money. And the reality is the biggest mistake I made as a parent, I mean, I made lots, but I mean, if I had to line them up, one of them clearly would be I did not instill having my kids having skin in the game. When they went to university, we paid for everything. It's almost easier not to have the money than have the money. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's easier. Laurel came from a family that didn't have the money, and yet they all went to university and they all had skin in the game. And so there's a blend between the two, right? I mean, you don't want to completely be zero, but you don't want to be completely off. I say to parents, like, you know, make sure if your kids have to get a job while they're at university, well, too bad. You know, being a parking attendant, being a tour operator, doing some tutoring. I mean, God bless Ted, our second son. He was working in the co-op. And I only found out after the fact, okay, after the fact. One term, he was full-time co-op and a full-time student. Figure that out. And guess who got the first 35 hours? The co-op. But you know what? He finished around 18th percentile in his class. So it's not as if he blew out the door. Talented kid. And so they required, on my part, planning, creativity, most importantly, love. Never lose sight of what you're doing this for. You're doing it to teach them to have a fulfilling life, achieve financial independence. They required, on my children's part, accountability, discipline, and desire. I had to instill a desire into them. The idea that they printed that book in the old days, the bank book, and they saw the money going up, they thought that was a sort of need. And then they came to me one day, and that's actually when the banks used to pay interest. We didn't have zero interest rates. And they said, what's this INT line? I said, well, that's when the bank pays you to have some money in the account. And by the way, when you have a mortgage, it goes the other way. Right? You're teaching them valuable lessons of life. This is what life's all about. So what did our children learn? I think they learned good core values, and they learned the basics of wealth management, which in my mind, if you put those two together in my Tale of Two Cities, you're 80% of the way to a city called responsibility. There's always the extraneous variables and, you know, the unusual situations. There's no guarantees in life. But 80% is not a bad deal. And I think if you don't teach them those two things, i.e. the basics of wealth management and good core values, and right out of Proverbs, the core values, there's a 60% chance they're on their way to a city called entitlement. So we now go to a city called significance. By wisdom a house is built, and through understanding is established. Proverbs 11, verse 2. In this part, I just want to talk about, you know, you're leaving a legacy, you arrive in a city called significance. That's not the end of the journey. It's not like the train stopped, you've arrived, and now it's time to enjoy the view. John Maxwell, I'm sure, would say every day, when Jim Rohn was alive, who's also of that same cloth, if you will, or the same group, they're always honing their skills to be just a little better. They're always looking for ways to be better. Matter of fact, the way I do these talks is, and anybody would like it, I've got the CD. I'm not trying to sell the CD. I burnt a copy on my iTunes. You can have it for free. I listen to it in the car because I think the greatest mistake speakers make is they don't listen as the audience. They just listen from our side. And so I'm always looking for ways to make it more simple, a little more creative, you know, interject. There's always in this room, the Holy Spirit comes in. Like I can tell you the Ruth Graham story about divorce and all that. That was a strange, that just came out of the blue. That's not in the paper, but or in the essay. But I think it's important that, you know, you also understand that when you arrive in a city called significance, significance is all about others. Success is all about you. Success, when we're successful at something, for the most part, we gain the recognition and we get the material rewards that come with it. When we're significant at something, when we're significant in someone else's life, we might never get the recognition that goes with that. And all the material rewards go to the person who's successful, not significant. And in some ways, significance is a step down from success. Not a step up. It's truly letting somebody else be the pilot. Just doing what you do well, how you achieve your success, your passion, your discipline, and how you became successful, and then sharing that process with others. It is the neatest thing. Matter of fact, one of the roles of a parent, I believe, is how I define significance. Remember I said success is discover your passion, commit the resources needed to become successful, and encourage and share it with others? Well, significance is help others discover their passion. Provide the resources so they can become successful at it. And lastly, encourage them to share their passion and success with others. I think this is where, when I've written my essay, It's Time to Let Go, if I had to say one sentence for parents, it's their life, not yours. Obviously, you can't just say, well, I'd let them discover their passion. There has to be wisdom in that. There are bills to be paid and et cetera. But, you know, the reality is not all of us are cut out to go to university. Not all of us are cut out to, you know, work on Bay Street. Not all of us are, you know, there's different, we all have different callings. And the key is to find out what your calling is and then become the best you can be at it. It's that simple. It's not complicated. I mean, it requires a leap of faith, of course. By the way, this isn't in the essay either. So when you arrive there, there are benefits in leaving a legacy. And I look at the benefits three ways. And I'm just about to conclude here for those that are getting a little long in the tooth. I hope we're on time. I'm not sure. It's great having a clock over my right shoulder. It's too bad it's 10 minutes fast. There are a number of benefits. First of all, for the community you live in. Let's start with the community. Obviously, when you leave a legacy, part of that legacy might include philanthropy. It might include the time you gave, or perhaps the money you gave. But again, when you leave philanthropy, 2-3 generations down the road, it will be just a name on a building. 2 or 3 generations down the road, the values you sowed into your family will still be there and still being practiced. So I'm not knocking people who leave money for buildings, obviously. It's extremely important. But boy, it's more exciting to leave the values, because the values are really what makes the world tick. So that's good for the community, good for your family. Leaving a legacy, remember what I said, one of the greatest challenges in life, my wife was here, she would tell you, she'd give her testimony, living with me for 30 years, is communication, right? Communication is so, so important. Listening, biting your lip, let the other person speak. Abraham Lincoln said it well, when I meet with a man, I spend 2/3 of the time thinking about what he wants to talk about, and 1/3 of the time what I want to talk about. Right? We're in a world, it's our agenda. We have to let other agendas have some room too. So it's very important, I think, you know, when you leave a legacy, how important it can be for your family. When you use your wealth to set up trust funds or generational transfer of wealth, you're sowing in your values. So, so important. Remember I said at the very beginning, I hope I did, you know, it takes, when you just leave money, it helps them meet a need. When you leave your values, it helps them accomplish their goals. And when you leave both, it helps them achieve their dreams. And lastly, but not least, for yourself. You know, it's great to be successful in life, but there's a whole bunch more challenges. And when you actually go to that third step in success, sharing it with others, it will open up doors that you've never thought. I mean, the idea of me 5 years ago standing up here from the 42nd row of TACF, right where I sit, and when they asked me to first speak, Steve Long said, well, do you want to sit up at the front? And I said, no, I want to sit where I always sit, because I want to encourage people that here's a guy from the 42nd row who can go up and talk. Now, not all of us are called to talk. I recognize that. But let's not make this a position. Let's keep it as a job, right? And, you know, and Steve would be right on with that. I mean, anybody, like, we're all pastors to a degree. Some have an official title. Some have a housing allowance, and others don't. But I think it's important. I try to get Laurel to get a housing allowance. We can't quite swing that one. But I think it's important that I said, no, Steve, I want to come from the 42nd row. And so the idea of me doing this, really, it all started with Blair asking me to speak at a conference. And my initial reaction was, no, I don't think so. It's on a Saturday. I want to watch the football game. And I said, get over it. Take a chance. Expand your comfort zone. When you stop changing, life is over. Benjamin Franklin. You are finished. When you stop changing, you are finished. Benjamin Franklin. So never be afraid to expand your comfort zone and stretch your skill set. So I think the benefits for myself is I got a chance to really understand my values. My values are simple: integrity, respect for others, responsibility for myself. And it really is, I found it quite fun coming to those decisions, coming to that rational process. So I want to conclude this talk about leaving a legacy with one of the most amazing stories I think I've come across. And it's a story that started back when Ted was climbing a treehouse in 1990 with his grandfather behind him. It was a story that had a second chapter when Dad and Ted went to the keg in 2006, when Dad sewed his DNA, or part of his DNA, into Ted. And let me not give any misunderstanding. There's a lot of other people who had an extremely important role in Ted's life. Matter of fact, he was sharing with me his grandmother, Laurel's mother, who has always said to Ted, too much is given, much is expected. She said, I don't really remember saying that, but he keeps saying that I did, so I sort of like it. God bless Claire. She's a wonderful grandmother. Isn't that neat, though? Her grandson thinks, you know, and he tells the story. I was at a fundraising event on Friday, and he was telling somebody there, you know, my grandmother, too much is given, much is expected. Well, the third part of this story, treehouse dinner, was on March 29, 2011. The University of Waterloo announced that Ted Livingston, a former student, had just made a donation of $1 million to the University of Waterloo. Now, the story gets a lot better. I mean, it's the seventh largest donation ever made by the university. No 23-year-old, from what I understand, has ever made that type of donation across Canada. Every officer, if you will, fundraising offers, it went viral within 2 hours. But the neat thing was, in the announcement, it said, this donation will help fund opportunities for young entrepreneurs who live in Velocity, which is the unique student-based resident program. You get sort of 4 months there, and you get to incubate your ideas. For students who live in Velocity, there will be at least 30 $25,000 awards to be given out over the next 5 years. Now, as an addendum, if you will, to the actual essay, the province of Ontario has matched that $1 million. So there are now 60 $25,000 awards to be given out. They just gave out the first three 2 weeks ago. And the reason Velocity was mentioned in the announcement was that's where Ted spent 4 months. And Ted's office, he actually charged kids to come in and talk to him. God bless him. I wonder if he tithed on that. I'll have to ask him. We'll get Laurel to fire in on that one. But he actually spent 4 months there. He came up with something. That's what you saw, the video clip, which was Unsynced, which is a music media concept that quickly morphed into something called a cross-platform text messaging service. And for those younger ones, if you've ever heard of Kik, K-I-K, that's his company. And the reason the $25,000 was selected was that was the exact amount his grandfather left him in his will, $25,000. And he acknowledged at the time that $25,000 played an instrumental role in carrying Kik through some challenging times. Because this is a kid who just went out on a wish and a vision, and we're not sure where it's all going to go. But the journey that he is going through now is life-changing. It's life-changing for him. It's life-changing for the community around him. Now, I'm just going to back up one step because everybody said, oh, he gave $1 million. He must have had 10. No. In March 2011, he actually arranged, and this is all public information, he arranged some venture capital financing out of the U.S. And he raised $8 million from three VCs, venture capitalists, who had never invested in Canada before. And one of them was Fred Wilson, and I forget the other two, of AVC.com, Union Square, I think it's called, the venture capitalist out of New York. And I've never met Fred, but you know what? Fred's got it wrapped around. He knows what significance is all about. He's encouraging others to discover their passion. He's providing the resources, the finances, but more importantly, the mentoring. And I could just see that a mile away. And I could be wrong. Laura wants to meet the guy. So I said, Laura, he's going to have a reception November 8th. You can come down. The last thing, though, is, back to the difference between success and significance. You know, Dad passed away 2 years before this all. Oh, sorry, I went down, I didn't finish it. So anyways, he raised $8 million in venture capital financing to make it all work because he didn't want to dilute all the shareholders, et cetera. Ted actually didn't really want to do it, and I know this will sound crazy, but he gave up $1 million worth of his own shares. So he actually had $1 million sitting in the bank. And if you remember out of the New Testament, the disciples asking Jesus when the poor woman gave her 2 copper coins, they said, well, that's not much money. And Jesus answered, well, that's all she had. Well, I would say $1 million is a lot of money, and that's all he had. He literally had $1 million in the bank for 3 weeks, and he's back to zero again. he has a heck of a tax receipt to work with over the next 5 years. And I said, Ted, this is out of my hands. Go find your own accountant. I wouldn't know where to start. I mean, my QuickTax program, or now TurboTax, doesn't take these ones into account. But all kidding aside, I mean, he literally gave it all away. Now, you can say, well, yes, he's got a lot more coming. He might not. This is a high-tech business can come and go so quickly. But I think the point is, Dad wasn't there to see the gift, but Dad's legacy was. Dad's legacy was there. What Dad sowed in, what Ted recognized and acknowledged in the announcement, spoke volumes to me. And yes, I'm the son, yes, I'm the father, but it is such a neat story. You know, for a generation that we sometimes say they're entitled, they're all selfish, they don't care, here's an example of someone who did. So let me finish with this. On your tombstone, if you elect to go that route, on your tombstone will be your name, perhaps a message, two numbers, the day you were born and the day you died. And there will be a dash between the numbers. And that dash will represent who you were, what you believed in, and what you'll be remembered for. The rest is just noise. When people look at it, it will be the dash. That, what will they think when they see that dash? And I think the question, or rather the what I want to leave you with, make your dash the best dash possible. Make your legacy the best legacy possible. The cards you've been given, whatever you've been given, go out and say, you know what? I'm going to work at it. So thank you for your time. Father, I thank you for the group. I thank you for your word. And I thank you for all the things that you've been giving us. Of course, I thank you for Jesus Christ, who left us a legacy that we can learn from. And we thank you for the word that we can use, the word, if it's the book of Proverbs, for knowledge and wisdom to help us in this walk. So in Jesus' name we ask all this. Amen. Thank you. Amen.